I'd like to remind all participants today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 11th of May. We have Alan Greenberg, Tatiana Kramsova, Siva Mutasami, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Ron Wickersham, Jeff Eckhouse, Ted Suzuki. From staff, we have Glenda Saint-Géry, Marika Konings, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies from Paul Diaz, James Bladel, Mason Cole, Mikey O'Connor. If I can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much. All right. As I mentioned, I think when most people were here, but not, I'm going to have to leave early today. So it'll either be a short meeting unless someone else wants to take over if there's still work to be done. But I think we have a short agenda so we can manage that. Last week, we went over the new questionnaire and the one that will be going into the report and we'll be taking as a poll sometime in the very near future. We were left with a few items that were that we could not resolve during the discussion, and the intent had been to have a significant discussion in email. Unfortunately, due to other commitments, I didn't get the actual messages out until yesterday. So I think we can hopefully come to closure on all of them today and then get a revised version of the questionnaire out pretty quickly. We will also talk a little bit about the current version of the draft report, about what else needs to be done and what kind of timeline we're aiming for. And I think that's about where we stand. If we get any questions before we dive right in.
Okay, Alan, it's Jeff.
Yes.
I had
yes,
just
Jeff.
A quick question. Do we have, do we have an agenda or a plan or anything for Brussels, or is it too early to start thinking about it, or do we want to start do that on the list?
It is, Marika's going to have to remind me, or maybe you can remind me. I thought we decided that there would be a meeting discussing the this report, and I haven't heard if it's scheduled or not. Marika, do you have any update for us?
Yeah, this is Marika. We actually haven't received the meeting forms yet to request those meetings. But indeed, as we previously discussed, the suggestion was to indeed organize like a information consultation session in which the working group would present its initial report and allow for some discussion with the community, basically in preparation for a public comment period, that, which would then be launched shortly following the Brussels meeting. So I think what we'll be looking at is like an hour and a half meeting, members of the work team presenting the report and the main recommendations, and also focusing on those issues where we would like further input or their opposing views to get some feedback there. And then have some discussion with the community. I think that will be the idea. And I think typically it probably would be either Wednesday afternoon or I think Thursday morning is possibly free now as well. I think they're considering moving the public forum to Thursday afternoon. So I need to see where there's a time availability.
Okay, preferably with no significant overlap between with other things that people in both at large, NCSG and GNSO will have very strong interests to the extent that we can control that.
I'll definitely do my best. And we normally can indicate which kind of meetings it shouldn't conflict, so we'll definitely do our best to avoid...
It shouldn't conflict, hopefully, with an RAA meeting or something like that.
So, Alan, it's Jeff again. Yeah. Just a follow-up. So maybe to you and to Marika. So I guess maybe some clarification. I guess maybe I'm confused. So we're saying that we will have our report done by the meeting and that we'll be presenting it and then submitting it for public comment, or will we be meeting internally to figure out the, to discuss the report, just so we can manage expectations?
No. The intent is that we have a report published by the deadline, which essentially is the end of May.
Yeah, okay.
And just to clarify, that would be the initial report. Just to clarify, it's not a final report, it's just an initial report, following which we'll go into the second phase in which we can, refine or further discuss some of the ideas or recommendations as well based on the public comments received.
Yeah. The intent at this stage is not to have any specific recommendations, but to have this revised questionnaire and our answers to it, which will hopefully imply some recommendations, but not try to formulate them at this point.
Okay. And
I think we're reasonably close to where we need to be.
Okay, and so I don't want to be a pain, but just who are we going to be presenting it to? This is not to the GNSO, not to the one on Sunday, that Sunday one. You're saying this is going to be to a larger group?
It's an open session.
Anyone who walks in the door.
Okay.
And we will encourage people to walk in the door.
And to add, there will also be a working group update to the GNSO Council as a standard practice, and I think for now that's foreseen for Saturday afternoon together with other working groups that are providing their updates to the GNSO Council. So that's a separate meeting that will take place as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would say, Al, I don't know, maybe I misread it, but I would say I would get the group maybe to send out a note saying that that's the plan and this is we would want to have it done by the end of May, because I don't know if everyone has that on their radar and is a deadline to have it done by then. So this way, you know, I guess the whole idea is forewarned, right? Send as much information as you can to the group so they know. Because I think, I know I didn't know, maybe I was the only one, but I have a feeling a lot of people might not know that we have a deadline for the end of May for the report.
Initial report.
Noted.
Initial report, sorry.
Noted. And that, in fact,
and
was...
Rick, if I could maybe add to that, because, you know, I think it's a very good suggestion to send it to the mailing list, and I think in combination we can maybe encourage people as well to look at the draft initial report that's already out there, and so people can start reviewing the other chapters, and maybe we can give them a deadline by which they need to send in edits and comments so the working group has a chance to review those before the deadline for publication.
I think we've now almost completed the last item on our agenda, but let's continue with this and then go back to the questionnaire afterwards. Ron?
Yes. This is just a question clarifying something in the draft initial report. Sometimes they refer to the community and sometimes to the public. Is there a distinction at all between the public and the community?
Can I answer that, Cheryl here?
Sure.
Yes, please.
From a representational role that covers both those very finely defined and distincted areas, when one in the world of at-large, capitalised at-large, or not capitalised at-large, talks about community, we talk about those of us in the ICANN community, and in this case it would be registrants, so DNS interests are there. So it's a community of interest in the very, very fuzziest and grey edges in the domain name system. Public goes beyond that. So Mrs. Jones, who probably hasn't learned how to spell internet yet, is public.
Mm-hmm.
So in the draft, we have a distinction where some things are available for reading by the public and some things are available to the community. Is everything going to be published available? How does the community identify itself in that sense of getting access to our work?
Ron, there's very little that the community, the ICANN community, has access to that the public doesn't, should they know where to look and care enough about it to try to find it. If you've read the recent communication report from the GNSO, they point out that ICANN websites and the GNSO website in particular are not the easiest thing to navigate. So whether someone could find them or not is a different matter altogether. But in terms of access to information, I don't think there's any difference. However, it may well be that in drafting the report, we have not paid careful attention to the distinction between the public and the ICANN community. So don't read too much into it until we've had a good chance to go over it.
Okay, thanks.
Jeff?
Sorry, one more question. Are you out? You will be presenting to the GNSO either Saturday afternoon or Sunday. The update, the report on the progress of the working group. Will you be submitting what that your report and your to the working group beforehand? Because the last one, I was there for the last one, and some of the items that you put in were kind of shocking to me and some of the other people in the group. So I want to know if the group would have a chance to review what you're going to present as the progress of the working group before it's presented.
Typically, it's the liaison, and that's Tim, who does the report. I believe I was called on a last-minute replacement for the Nairobi meeting.
I'll ask Tim about that. Thanks.
Certainly, it was not my intent to shock anyone, but on the other hand, my recollection is I wasn't given an awful lot of preparation either.
No, that's fine. So I want to know if so. But you are the one who prepares the report, or Tim does? Just so I know where.
Generally, Tim has, and I certainly have no problem working with Marika and giving him something if that's what he wants.
Okay, I just wanted to. I'll ask him then.
I don't think there is any pro forma practice. It's whatever has evolved.
Oh, okay. All right, thanks.
Cheryl?
Just a minor bit of pedantry. When we have terms like community and public being a little fuzzy to those of us immersed in this work, it might be a very good idea for us to put a very, very tiny glossary or a point at which we say, when we say this, we mean that in the following document, that's all.
And if we don't, you'll catch it when you review it. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to respond to Jeff's questions, I think what happens with a lot of working groups is that we normally prepare slides, sometimes with staff or the chair prepare some slides that cover the main points that you know they want to provide as an update or as well for the workshop, for example. So I think here we could do the same thing and prepare some slides ahead of the meeting that everyone can comment on or provide input on, which will serve them as a basis for either the update, but maybe also the public session that will cover the report and the options or recommendations that are included in there.
There's certainly an intent to do the presentation ahead of time. To what extent we'll make good on that intent remains to be seen. But it's not meant to be a surprise. Any other questions? And Michaela is now on the call, if I read my meeting view correctly. Welcome.
Sorry about that, Bob.
No, we're glad you're here.
And Barry is here as well.
I got confused about times.
I think we heard Barry as well. Hi, Michaela.
Hi.
Okay, back to the items that we were left over from last week. We have the first one was an issue with question number 5. And this is actually a bit more than what we talked about last week. If you go to the questionnaire, the draft one, you'll see a long laundry list of things ranging from Twitter to SMS to a number of points on not how they are sent, but related issues, who they get sent to and things like that. The one question that came up as I was trying to draft this new statement or direction is the current RAA says nothing about how messages are sent. It simply says notification is, it talks in the vague way in 3.7.5 or whatever the number is, about notifications. The implication to most people is it is email. There certainly is no commitment that it's email or any other methodology, and indeed it's not clear in the most general case what the appropriate methodology should be. Do we need to put something in regarding that? I guess my question is, if the registrar says I use carrier pigeon, don't you have a carrier pigeon bay on your house for the carrier pigeon to land? It meets the words. Not clear if it meets the intent. Do we need any level of specificity there? I guess I'd like to get a bit of a conversation going. Jeff.
Yeah, I would say no, and the main reason why is you have to think about the terms of the RAA. That when I say term, I mean length of time. That it is right now, most people will not sign their new RAA for, I don't know, maybe another year or two, and then that would extend another 5 years when they sign it. So we could have something where we're asking now, saying we could specify something in the next, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 years, where items like Twitter and other things were not invented, and maybe, you know, there'll be some new method of communication that will be the simplest, easiest way to send something out. But, you know, it, since it's not required or it's not done, people will not put it in. So that's why I think we're in a world of technology where things change so rapidly that specifying what that means of communications are might hinder what we need to do, versus saying, hey, leave it up to the registrar, who, as I just want to be clear, most of the time, almost, I'd say almost all the time, has an incentive to get in touch with the registrar and have them renew the domain.
Unless they don't, and that's, the, of course, the problem.
No, I think I didn't say 100% of the time.
Yeah.
I'm saying almost all the time.
Yeah. I'll put myself in the queue, but Michele first.
I mean, Jeff is pretty much saying what I said on the last call. If you're looking for something, I suppose I'm going to use that term that everybody hates, something along the lines about reasonable means or making reasonable efforts to contact the registrant. But I don't actually know how you would word that, to be perfectly frank.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem. You know, regarding Twitter and SMS, we decided definitively last time we would not put things like that in. They certainly don't belong in the RAA and probably don't even belong in a best practices. But the issue kind of came down to, do we need to put anything in to try to define reasonable? And you know, I'm a little bit concerned that there may be that there's absolutely nothing there. With regard to what Jeff said, if we end up recommending a consensus policy on things within the picket fence, and EDDP is a consensus policy, so modifying it is a consensus policy, that takes effect immediately. That's not a 5-year lag for signing the RAA. If there are other terms that we're recommending which are outside of the picket fence, then we have a potential lag. So, anyone else have with thoughts, or do you want to leave it to the drafting team to try to come up with some words which have some meaning? Not seeing any hands, I'll assume that's the case. The next one is the post-expiration web intercept, and this was more of a question than anything else. And I don't think we have anyone on the call who wasn't on last week, so we're going to have to reach out explicitly. And the question was, in the typical case, whatever typical is, do registrars tend to intercept all subdomains when they're intercepting web traffic to put up the splash page or whatever it is they're putting up, or do they just focus on www.domain.tld? And we know some certainly intercept all, and I think we need to just basically make sure that we're not going to be making a recommendation which is not implementable or not practical. There was also a suggestion last time that the rules about what you do should not be required if you are in actual contact with the with the registrant. And Michele, you had some words in an email you sent just a little while ago talking about trying to define it in reverse. Michele, are you there?
I'm there. I'm just trying to find what the hell I sent.
Okay. I can't find it either. I was hoping you could.
It would have been brilliant, I'm sure, Michele.
It's amazing what caffeine will do.
hold on.
It was effectively trying to define not in contact. And
yeah, it might be easier to not define in contact, but rather look at the opposite, i.e.
yeah.
the completely unreachable and unresponsive, if that makes sense.
That is what he suggested, but he had some nice words for it.
That was what I said. It might be easier not to define in contact, but rather look at the opposite, i.e. completely unreachable and unresponsive, if that makes sense. Cheryl's reading back the email I posted.
Ah, okay, I'm sorry. I thought she was inventing it anew.
No, I was quoting the man.
Okay, you found it quicker, better than I did. I'm quite happy with that. I think that's.
Because the problem is, Alan. I mean, you're going to end up getting yourself twisted round and round and not get anywhere if you're trying to define what is in contact. Whereas total lack of response is probably something that people can actually agree on.
I think we're violently agreeing with you, and thank you for the inspiration.
Woohoo!
All right, we'll try to craft some words that say that, and hopefully we'll do not too bad a job. The next one, it was question 15, which was the transfer during the post expiration period. Oh, Ron, I'm sorry. Yes, Ron.
Okay. Yes. Still on question 9. The thing that I was interested earlier in that question was to say if the registrar and the registrant are in active communication, then nothing in the policy should prevent them from working out a mutually acceptable arrangement for what happens to the web and by extension, email or whatever, what happens to the domain. If they are actively communicating, the policy should allow them the freedom to work it out between them if they are communicating. So if we put something in writing that is interpreted to prohibit them from communicating and working out something the week after it expires, that would be a disservice, I think. So we want to make it in.
Yeah, I think we took your words last time, and we're just trying to define in contact. And the suggestion from McKaylee was we define not in contact, and the converse applies.
Mm-hmm.
The words you just used may well apply, and I didn't capture them, but we'll go back to the MP3 and try to put those together with what McKaylee said and come up with a sentence that makes some sense. So I think your point was well taken, and I don't think there's any disagreement on that. Okay, 15. If you remember correctly from the discussion last week and the emails that preceded it, the current situation seems to be the following, and Marika, if I'm misstating, please jump in. The advisory that came out about a year and a half, a year plus ago, made it very clear that except in certain very specific circumstances, a registrar may not deny a request for transfer post-expiration. It was noticed, however, that it was phrased saying the registrar may not deny a request. And the question arose, what happens if due to the, for instance, but not restricted to, the changing and who is information, or a registrant not being able to access the tools within the registrar site because the domain is expired, they cannot make the request to transfer, which may be unlock it or give me the key or whatever the incantation is that is necessary for a specific registrar. The response from compliance was, that's not our problem. The IRTP only talks about denying requests. It doesn't talk about guaranteeing the right to be able to make the request. So, Jeff, in answer to your email, which you sent just a little while ago, your email implied that if the registrar does not allow or provide the mechanism to make the request, that's a compliance issue, and compliance says no, it isn't.
So if I can respond, I think Ron
sure.
Paul sent an email to the list that he, I think, he just sent it really recently, which sort of probably clears up my statement because I think I didn't really clarify it. I want to make a difference between what the request is and the difference. The request is made to the gaining registrar. So if you're at, I'll use Network Solutions and GoDaddy since neither of them are on the call. If I want to transfer the name from GoDaddy to Network Solutions, I make the request at Network Solutions. So, and Rob had stated this in his email. He says, the registrar makes the request for a transfer at a different registrar than the one that has the domain. So he says, I can't imagine why any registrar would not take the request for a transfer. They are gaining a client. So he actually clarified it. That's what I was trying to say, is that the person who makes the request, you make the request to the registrar, no registrar is going to turn down a request because they're the gaining registrar. They're about to get a domain into their account. What the person can, what might be an issue is the losing registrar, where the domain is now, maybe, as you said, because of who is, whatever it is, they can't get the auth code to transfer their domain out. That is another issue, and that is a compliance issue if they don't supply the auth code.
Well, it's not only an auth code. In some registrars, the domain is set so that it is untransferable unless the registrant takes action.
Do you have a specific example? But that is a difference between. So I just want to say, because you said, hey, I had some questions about the wording. So I wanted to say requesting is.
Requesting may well be the wrong word. Yeah, I accept that as valid criticism.
Right. So, no, I'm just trying to help you craft a question or a piece on there. And I want to just so let's figure out what this – and that's why I had said let's figure out what the specific problem is, because I want to attack that versus putting just something in there that isn't really an issue, because no new registrar would say no to a request to –
And
your point
is well taken. But the words we need is – The RAE must have the ability to do whatever needs to be done at the losing registrar to facilitate that transfer.
Right, and that was my point about, I thought that was a compliance issue. If the registrar says, because there's a rule in, I can't remember in the RAE, it's somewhere it says, within a reasonable amount of time or something, they have to supply the auth code through some, you know, I can't remember, it's a regular method or delivery, so I don't have it right in front of me and just going from memory. So that's why I was saying that's a compliance issue. If people don't supply EP auth codes, then that was a compliance issue. So that hopefully I cleared up what I was stating.
Okay, we may need to, I guess I'm confused, because when compliance was asked, they were asked about the losing registrar side, and they came back with the answer, which I think said, it's not an issue if the request can't be made. Marika, you have your hand up. Can you
this is Marika. And I think that the comment that compliance made would relate to the situation where, indeed, the losing registrar is requested to provide an auth info code or make the transfer, but it basically says, look, you're no longer listed in the whois as the registrant, so we're not recognizing you as the registrant, so we're not providing you with that information. And that wouldn't be a compliance issue, because indeed, according to the whois information, the registrant or the REE is no longer recognized. So I think that's more the situation where compliance was responding and saying that there's a policy that prescribes in that situation that, you know, a request has to be recognized even though the registrant or the REE is no longer listed in the whois information. I mean, in addition to that, I need to clarify as well, because we did ask compliance as well, is this a common issue, or do you get many complaints about that? And they look back, I think, over the last six months or 12 months, and weren't able to identify a situation where that was an issue. So, you know, potentially this is just a theoretical situation that could occur, and the question is indeed for this group, is this something to address here, or provide some clarification that there's an understanding that, you know, that it's not implied that, you know, there's a guarantee following expiration that any registrant can request a transfer, that the losing registrar has an obligation to cooperate with a transfer request.
Yeah, Marika, it may also not only be who is, but also whether the RE has access to the registrar's mm-hmm. control panel or whatever it is to simply
yes.
make the request. Maybe the three of us can, maybe you, me, and someone from compliance can get on the phone together and try to hash this out instead of trading emails. Cheryl?
Thank you. Just to assist in that, you do have some precedent if you want to look at what happens in the world of .au. It's not theoretical in the in our country code. It is, in fact, both a problem we have had and a problem we have had to solve. So you do have precedent in how we manage it. And if anyone wants to ask me how we manage it, because it's a considerable issue, or should I say it used to be a considerable issue in the dim, dark days before our industry code of practice, I'm happy to give you the links.
Okay. Jeff? Thank you, Cheryl.
I have an issue with people stating, you know, that there are, we see this, or this has been solved in, no offense, you know, in certain CCTLDs, but it's because you can't say that, we can't pick and choose things from certain other country codes and say this is an issue, because we have to look at the full tapestry of how everything works within that CCTLD to say that's why it's an issue. It could be an issue or could have been an issue because of other factors that are not present in the GTLD world. So we cannot just pick and choose little items and say this was, or let's look at this and see how they fixed it because, or how it works, because it does not take into account everything that goes on in the GTLD world. So I know it's easy, it's tempting to do that, but sometimes it's not fair to do that because cause and effect are not always shown.
Okay, I put my hand back up again I wasn't going to take the valuable time to give the gory details, but now I will. If a application is made to you go to a new service provider and you say transfer my domain name, the process goes through and then they get back to you as a registrant to say sorry, can't, and this doesn't have to even be post expiry, can't because this and this. Our rules simply say you go to AUDA, and in this case you'd say you go to ICANN, and therefore people know that they can make it a compliance or a complaint issue. It was at that level, not the gory details, that I think you feared, Jeff.
All right. I would suggest that at this point we try to discuss with compliance to make sure we're all using the same language. And go. Is that Jeff?
This is Barry.
Yeah, Barry, go ahead.
And just to try to get a little bit more granular about this and with respect to compliance, we would only be talking about cases where auto renews didn't actually occur, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Well, what do you mean by auto renew? We use the term two different ways.
Well, my point is that what that question is, if the registrant or the RAE is no longer listed in who is, if the domain was auto-renewed by the registrar, from what I've seen out there in the world, the registrant at expiration is still listed in who is. Therefore, there would, you know, compliance would be able to act in that case.
Well, if it was renewed, and we're talking about the interaction between the registrant and registrar, then it's not an expired domain anymore, and it's not within our purview.
Hmm.
So I think the only ones we're talking about are ones which are technically expired. That is, from the registrar's point of view, the registrant has not paid the next year's money.
And the requesting registrar, because there's Cheryl here, and the requesting registrar has tried to gain the name for the registrant, and there is some reason why that can't happen, then the registrant at expiration is different, has to go down different pathways, and that should make it a complaint, if not a compliance issue.
Yeah, as I said, I think we need to clarify with compliance, because the point Rob and Jeff made is correct. It's not, the term request is not the right one. So that is not the request from the registrar, from the registrant. But very often there are hoops through the which the registrant must jump through with the losing registrar to make sure it can actually happen.
Yeah, may I, Shiva, here?
Yes, please go ahead.
I think the right of the registrant to his domain name and the right of the registrant to recover his domain name should prevail over the right of a registrar to retain his customer. And we are also talking about a registrar's right to retain a customer or a domain name forcefully. It's the registrant who has the right to his domain name. It's the registrant who has the right to recover his domain name. And why are we worried about...
I don't think anyone's disagreeing with you.
Well, if nobody disagrees, then why are we again and again talking about the unwillingness of a registrar, losing registrar, and gaining registrar, and so on? So this is...
I can only tell you why I'm talking about it. I'm talking about it because I want to make sure that the registrant does have the ability to do the transfer. And that may be the case right now because of a misunderstanding in words, or if not, then I would like to see at least, the very least in our questionnaire, a question about should they have the right. And as Jeff and Rob pointed out, we need to get the words right.
Okay. Okay, that's my
point. I don't think anyone's arguing against the right. The only question is it already there and we don't know it?
Okay.
And that's really the question. All right, so with the agreement of the group, we'll try to talk to compliance and make sure we understand what the situation is, and then if necessary, try to word a question here to address, to put it to the work group and to the larger community via the report we're publishing. The next item in the email I sent is there are a number of questions with options that say the registrar must do something on expiration. And we're talking about, must stop the domain from working or, various other words similar to that. And the question is, how soon do they have to do that? It's a practice of some registrars to give a courtesy of leaving it up for a small amount of time. There was some discussion earlier on in our working group that we don't want to specify it must be done immediately or within 3 hours, because there's just operational issues that the registrar has to contend with that may make it impossible or impractical to do it in a very short period of time. The question is, what kind of time do we put in, which does not put a unreasonable demand on the registrar, but allows us to have the failure of the domain to work as normal be an indication to the registrant, the RAE, that there is a problem. And the question is, what kind of time frame is reasonable? If we say 2 days, is that enough? 1 day, 3 days? I'm a little bit reluctant to do things, in anything less than a day, because I think, there are operational issues which simply kick in. Any thoughts? Jeff is the sole American registrar here. What kind of time would you feel comfortable with?
So this is a tough one. I hate to put specifics in, what's reasonable and what's the other terms. I'm still thinking about this one.
I use reasonable as a placeholder for something specific. And now I'm asking what's specific.
Yeah, I hate using specific. I think about, maybe... I try and think about, how it works, what reasonable has ever been used, sort of like, you know, like best commercial efforts in, you know, in the contracts or something like that? Can, is there something that says, you know, it has to be within what, you know, what a reasonable person or what's expected within the industry, something like that? I'd rather use a term like that than a specified time frame.
How about, you know, saying, giving a specific time, saying, and, you know, barring exceptional circumstances or something like that?
Yeah, but then what happens is then it's like, how do you define exceptional? People are going to complain about, you know, they want an exceptional circumstance. It's a tough path, and I think when you have to think about all the different registrars and their practices, if we say a specific time and it's say, let's say it's, I'll just make it, just throw something out. So let's say we decide it's 14 days, but the registrar says, hey, I have a right to take action within 3 days, then is that reasonable? You know, it's...
Well, I certainly wouldn't say 14 days. That defeats the whole purpose of waking up the registrar.
I was just, you know, an outside, yeah. You know, outside example of what I'm saying. What if it's 4 days and the registrar decides, hey, I'm deleting all names or whatever within 1 day? Is that then reasonable? You know, that's not reasonable, but it's within the specified time frame. I'm just pointing out an extreme example about why putting in a specific date doesn't work as well as a term like reasonable. But that's just my opinion.
Anyone else? I don't think we can use reasonable. I think there are too many definitions of that. Ron?
Yes, I would think there. Yeah, this is a really difficult thing, especially since you're trying to do it over a number of different issues and saying what it is. Again, this may be something you could do almost the opposite by saying it's unreasonable to suggest that people do it with a time tolerance of 6 hours, but can we ask the registrar community to say if 1 day is reasonable constraint from their operational point of view? Can we phrase it as a question so that we get a meaningful response rather than just column A, column B, or you know, a group of numbers that we don't know. Some of us who would be voting would not really understand all of the issues that a registrar may bring up.
All right. How about in the survey that we, you know, the survey does not have to have the same level of specificity that a contract does. How about in the survey if we leave it reasonable, the word reasonable or something, but define it as say that this time, you know, during the actual in the next steps we will have to define a specific time, perhaps 1 to 3 days or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, your original statement, you know, saying that everything should go dark, you know, most of us agree with that, but the real problem is if the registrar decides that 31 days is reasonable, that doesn't meet your objective of things
right.
Going dark, acting as the wake-up call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ron, then McKaylee.
Yeah. I suppose we could put a more fixed number saying 1 day and then ask that to elicit any reasons in certain circumstances why that is not reasonable.
Yeah.
So that we could get informed by people who understand where the reasonableness originates.
I guess I don't want the concept rejected because the day is the number was wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
My concern.
Understand.
McKaylee?
It's an awkward one. I suppose it might be easier, again, to kind of take it the other way, as in what would we view as being completely unreasonable?
Yep.
So, in other words, if everybody agrees that 14 days is an unreasonably long period of time from when the domain has expired then we can say, right, okay, that line in the sand we consider to be too far. So then, you know, moving it backwards from there rather than trying to come up with what would be practically an arbitrary number of days. And I'm not saying that it's arbitrary, well, it is arbitrary to a certain point. I mean, as Ron says, and others have said as well, it's hard to know exactly what people are doing and how they're doing it. So if you were to impose, just say for argument's sake, 48 hours from the expiry, realistically speaking, you know, that could have an unintended circumstance that you hadn't thought of. But if you were to say, right, well, 14 days we consider to be unreasonably long, how about 10? Is 10 too long? Is 7 too long? And just work it back that way.
Yeah, I guess that's why I don't want to use a specific number. You know, as your example of 48 hours, if the registrar has a practice of only doing these kind of things once a day, but they don't work on Sundays, you could miss that 48 hours easily. So that's why we need to set it at something that does not put undue stress on a well-functioning registrar. And that's why I suggest at this stage, let's not try to do our homework to find out what the right number of days is, but ask the concept question, and assuming there's general agreement, if everyone says don't do it, then we don't have to figure out the number of days. If there's general agreement, as we're expecting there to be, that the ceasing to work is the wake-up call, which is the wake-up call message that we want to send, then we have to do some homework and figure out what a reasonable period is. Does that sound like a reasonable way to go forward? I really don't want to spend a lot of time, especially since we have so few registrars on this call, and even the ones on this call are not necessarily representative of the smaller registrars, that I don't think we want to try to set the number right now. But I think I was misdirected in trying to set it at this stage, and we should just leave it now, but define that we do have to come back and fix it before any policy were made, if we end up with policy. Not hearing any disagreement. I have one other question that we didn't do. In the several questions that we talk about with domains ceasing to function one way or another, email, web, or other services, we provide options saying they should stop functioning either by policy or best practice or the status quo. And I think in fairness, so we don't define the answer by the questions, we should also have an option saying that to the extent possible, the service should remain operational. Does anyone object to including that? I mean, that's characterized by what Shiva has been saying for email, but I think there are also other people who have claimed that for web, that we shouldn't stop things working. And in fairness, I think we should, to all the options possible, I think we should include that as one of the options, unless there's any strong objection to it here. Not hearing any or seeing any. Is there anything else we need to talk about at this point before we call the meeting to an end? I've got to leave in a few minutes, and I think we've covered most of the issues that we wanted to address and give us the ability for Marika and I and the other people on the drafting team to try to come to closure on this and integrate it into the draft report. Ron?
Just a question on how we can, as participants, be helpful and not be annoying for the actual drafters. The current draft initial report needs a lot of work, a lot of little work. Should some of us take the time to go line by line and help with typos and stuff that would make the meeting more more clear, would that be helpful, or is it just, would it overwhelm, and if 20 of us did it,
it's
there wouldn't be time enough to go through it?
Yeah. It's definitely going to be helpful at this stage or the next, and Marika has her hand up, so I'll have her answer.
Yeah, this is Marika, and from my personal preference would be definitely go through the report and also, you know, highlight, you know, spelling mistakes, things that, you know, don't make sense or can be written clearer, and preferably using track changes. It shouldn't be too difficult for me, like if several people, even if they mark up different documents, to integrate that into one document so we can see all the changes that are being proposed, so everyone has an opportunity as well to review those edits. So I think that's why it's important that we set a kind of deadline by which those kind of edits need to be in, so everyone has a chance to review those and make sure that, you know, that they're not changing the content, but just, you know, clarifications or things like that. So I think that would definitely be appreciated. And I said, you know, preferably, you know, marking up the document if possible.
Yeah. The work that has to be done this week clearly is to integrate the survey. And I think we need to start putting together the attendance report that we said we wanted to add. By the way, Marika, the one that is in the CCT report, the one that's out for comment right now, Mason Cole's group, has a pretty nice format which breaks out the attendance over the meetings and divides them by, you know, the source, whether they're registrars, registries, NCSG, and I think that's probably a good model to use. We may have to tweak it somewhat.
Yeah, that's I think the standard model that's used by Deepa,
okay,
and Glenn when they keep attendance. And one comment I would have there is that because it's quite difficult to integrate the table, especially, you know, if you've covered quite some meetings and a lot of participants in a readable way in the report. So what I've done, I think, here and as well that is being discussed in other work teams or working groups is just to basically list the number of meetings that people have attended in the body of the report, and then provide a link to the actual Excel sheet that has the detailed overview of, you know, which meeting people attended and when they sent apologies and when they didn't, to provide it as a link, because it's as an attachment, it doesn't come up that nicely in a Word document, unfortunately.
Okay, well, let's try it that way, and we can always fix that up. I've lost track of how many meetings there are and whether it's practical or not to try to show them, but. Certainly, one way or another, we need to integrate that, because, as has been pointed out and discussed before, the lack of participation in some areas is one of the key problems we've had, and we need
Alan,
to make sure that's reflected. Sure, go ahead.
Just one more question. When should we aim to have the next poll out with the questions that we have as well, time to review with the group?
I think we need to have it. I'd like to say before the next meeting, but probably at the next meeting or just around the next meeting. Last week was a bad one for me catching up with this work. There were just too many other phone calls and teleconferences and tasks I had. This week is a little cleaner, and hopefully I'll do the part I've committed to in this meeting within the next 24 hours or so. And,
okay. Well, because
we should get it cleaned up.
Yeah, because once we have the final language, you know, it shouldn't take me too much time to put that into in the Zoomerang survey tool and get that out to the group.
Okay, let's aim at the end of this week. I'm not quite sure I'm going to be able to make that and combined with what you have to do, but let's target that.
That's fine. And just to note, I wouldn't mind either if it's Monday, because Thursday is actually public holiday here in Belgium.
Ah,
for a long
and Friday is officially off. So.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
But I'm happy to get it out. If you get it out before the time, I'll do my best to get it out to the world,
okay,
as much time as possible to complete it.
As usual, I thank you, and we thank you. Anything else before we call it to close? I thank you for your participation, and we'll see you in a week.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.